Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome. I can't tell you how happy I am to be a part of this highly esteemed panel here and to be sharing this initiative and everything, all the good work that's going on, not just in our community, in our state, in the country, in the world, around connected and automated vehicles and future mobilities. Before we get into the program, I just want to take a minute and thank our host, the library. They've done a great job. I've partnered with them on many things over the years, and I want to give a shout out to them for hosting this event here, and also to the city of Ann Arbor. I think that these forums are really very important. Obviously, a lot of other people think that as well. So thank you for being an engaging and interactive community that takes the time to do these. So I think that all of us on this panel and doing the work in this space, the underlying reason that we're here is really for safety. And the work, the research, the development as far as connected and automated vehicle technology and future mobilities has a huge impact. The impact on society, the impact on saving lives is really tremendous. So I think probably many of you are familiar with this really devastating crash scene. This is footage from a 150-car pileup. 94 just outside of Kalamazoo, and you can just see the cars. Yes, it's really unbelievable, and the impact, it's really amazing when you look at that footage and realize that we only lost one life in that accident. We believe that the work that's being done has a huge impact on saving tremendous number of lives and really reducing the rate of traffic accidents. So some of the things that we're going to talk about tonight, and really the experts in the field who are on this panel are going to get into a lot of the details, but it really is about how what connected and automated means, how that relates to one another, how do the vehicles relate to the infrastructure, and really get into a lot of that. What are the facilities about? What's needed there? What are we doing at the American Center for Mobility? We're going to talk about a number of different things, but really the underlying focus is to improve public safety. So there's still some challenges that are ahead when you look at technical issues. There's some policy issues as well. But we're one of the things that we're going to do that's really the spirit of our work is to collaborate with a lot of different groups, a lot of different experts in the field to get a lot of voices here so we can move this forward. This is just another example. I'm sure you all recall the fatal accident regarding the Tesla vehicle over the summer. Again, this is another illustration for us of why it is so critical for us to be doing the research, the testing, in order to get to the safe deployment of this technology and the vehicles onto our public roadways. One of the things that is also very clear, and I think really came to light with this accident over the summer, is the need for voluntary standards. What we want to avoid is just a patchwork of different guidances or regulations that vary across the state. So we really need to lead the effort as far as accelerating the development of voluntary standards. Again, I talked about collaboration. I know the group will talk about it more, and you can see it represented well here with this panel. You need the technical expertise. You need industry at the table. You need the standards bodies at the table. You need academia, and you need government all working together and all helping to get to some guidelines and ultimately some regulation that will probably come out. We believe also that the proving grounds and a lot of the work that's actually being done there will help to accelerate that process. So bringing it all together, the safe validation of the technology, they're really, it's a combination of the three methodologies that you really need for the safe deployment. So it's a controlled track testing combined with the on-road testing and operation, and then also combined with the computer simulation. Again, why does this matter? Because this is about saving lives. It's about increasing public safety. So more than 35,000 people died in traffic accidents in 2015. That number was up about 8% over the year prior. The most significant increase that we saw in that number was for pedestrians and bicyclists. So the work that's being done here, again, the development of standards will really significantly reduce this number that's just kind of become accepted in society. And the future is here, and the time is now. So with that, we'll move right into the forum and to the program. So our first presenter is probably, I would say, one of the most forward-thinking and innovative Department of Transportation directors. Kirk Steidel is the director of the Michigan Department of Transportation and really leading the way here in Michigan compared to any other state, hands down.
Thank you. Well, as Laurel did the lead-in, you know, there's 35,000 Americans that die, but in Michigan, last year that number was 1,054, and 2 years before that it was 863. And we had a long decline when it was going down. In the last 2 years, it's gone back up again. A lot of factors, the economy's turned around, people are driving more. The vehicles are as safe or safer than they were even a couple of years ago. But if you think about 1,054, the technology that we're talking about here has been cited by NHTSA, actually from a study that was done here 5 years ago in Ann Arbor, the safety pilot model deployment, which four of us were all a part of, that proved that you could reduce that number by about 80%. So pretty rough numbers, that would have meant last year there would have been 800 Michigan motorists that would have been alive. So that's a sobering fact, but that's the reason that this is so important. I also think it's important to note, while there's been a lot of work on this through the years, the technology's finally all coming together in multiple places to really make this a reality. And I do believe that we are going to see it here in Michigan very soon, and we certainly are going to be leading the way. I want to talk to you about what happened last fall in the legislature. Actually, it happened and started in about April. Finally, four bills were passed in December and signed by the governor into law, and I'm going to talk about what those four are. These four are the leading bills in the entire country. There is only one state that is even close, and that's not California, it's Florida. And then actually these laws allow more of the technology on the roads than Florida's does as well. And while I don't have the comparison, a slide for the comparison, I can tell you that there's a lot of states that are doing testing and research. What Michigan did with these laws were to get government out of the way, but provide a framework for the auto companies and the researchers to work within, and then let the technology drive the deployment, instead of a process that was being set up that would have required to go to the next step, to come back and say, okay, we did this, now can we do the next one? And while that sounds really appealing, that you'd say, okay, we're through with all of these, now we can go to the next one, from a legislative standpoint, it is practically impossible to be able to respond that way. Legislation, even legislation that everybody agrees on, takes quite a while to get through. So I'm going to run through what these four bills are. So the first one is Public Act 332, and Wei, we stole the picture from M-City. This is actually Ford testing their their autonomous vehicle, one of their first generations. But what this bill did was eliminates the testing only ban. In 2013, we put a bill in place that allowed for testing on roads, and you had some certain requirements. What this law did was took that testing requirement away. If you still want to test, there's still some requirements that you have to have for testing, so we don't have people just willy-nilly driving vehicles down the road that really have no business being on the road. But what it did was opened up all roads in Michigan to allow an automated vehicle to be driven on them at any time and for any purpose. No testing, no special driver's license, an operator, no special license on the back of the car. If you would look on the back of an automated vehicle, it'll look like the same blue and white license plate that you would see driving around Ann Arbor. It might even have one of the M's on it if you got a specialized plate. But it wouldn't be anything special. There's other states where they have a special plate if it's an automated vehicle. This basically put all roads on the map, said, when you can buy one. You can't buy one today, so you're not going to see one in the next 6 months. You can't buy one, but when you can buy one, you can drive them, or you can operate. You can be in one. How's that? Because even the term operation isn't expressly put in here, because the qualifications to ride in an automated vehicle are different than those to drive a regular automobile. So it very purposefully left out those requirements, because if you just think about an elevator, when elevators first came in, you had to have an operator, and it was too scary to operate an elevator, and you know, you had to let the elevator man do that. Now you could all let your kids get on the elevator and push floor 8, and up it goes and out they come. In the future, when the technology is available, that all you do is push the destination, then the need to have a driver's license, a driver's test because you're 16, maybe you need a driver's test because your abilities aren't as good anymore because they've degraded over time, or maybe you physically can't see or operate a vehicle. Those issues will kind of go away. So this law actually purposefully stays away from that. The next one allows for truck platooning. Now, what's a truck platoon? So it's it might look like rush hour, right, where cars are really close to each other driving down the road. But in this case, it's two trucks. You're very likely to see them on a freeway. There's really not a need for them to do truck platooning on a city street, because it's all about efficiency. It's about one following the other very closely. It could be 10 feet apart. It could be 30 feet apart. What this law basically did was change the legal requirement for commercial trucks to be 300 feet apart. And it said, if you're electronically connected, meaning the front truck is controlling the speed and the braking for the back truck because through electronics, then you can change that following distance to whatever distance you feel comfortable. There's also a provision that says the platoons, first of all, must have a driver, a certified CDL driver in the seat, because they have to do the steering. And if they are on they will be on a freeway, but if somebody is trying to enter or exit the freeway, the platoon has to brake and let the car in. What we certainly didn't want is a long string of cars or a long string of trucks, and then you know somebody's trying to come in and they get run off the road, or they miss an exit because of that. So those are allowed. There is a provision that they have to submit a plan to the Department of Transportation and to the state police, and then we respond to their plan, and then in 6 months they can continue. I mean, they can implement their plan right away, but after that they can go to any roads that they want. Now, why would you do this? Well, when two trucks platoon and they get close, the energy savings is about 8% for the back truck, because there's no wind, right? It's hiding behind the other one, and about a 4% increase for the front truck. So about 12% between the two of them in fuel efficiencies. So there's certainly some interest from the trucking industry to do that as well. The next piece of this same bill, which is Bill 332, allows for automated vehicle networks. What's that? That's a driverless Uber. So it would allow for a network of vehicles, a network of Uber cars that would not have a driver to drive on Michigan roads. It also requires that whoever is in charge of that network is the one that is responsible for those cars. So they are the ones that are completely liable. They do not, they can't shift it to somebody else. But at the same time, that company also determines where those vehicles will or can drive. So an example would be if one of these networks was deployed here in Ann Arbor and you walked out of the front door and you called up your driverless network app, it could be Uber or Lyft, could be some other company name by then, and you want to go to, you know, a mile away, you may get an option that says you can get a traditional Lyft or Uber for, maybe it says $7, and you might, and then you would be provided a second option that says you could take a driverless one and it might cost you $3. I'm making up the numbers how much it might cost, but you would see that there's a difference. Then you make the decision whether you want to get a driverless one or you want to be in a traditional one. So that choice remains with the consumer. But at the end of the day, that's how we see a lot of this deployment moving and going forward. There's another piece to this, and it creates the Council on Future Mobility. One of the conversation was, well, you shouldn't pass these bills because you haven't answered the liability issues, the cybersecurity issues, the insurance issues, and a whole laundry list of other very small things. And not that those three are small, those are big ones, but some other small things. And what these bills did was create this council to deal with those specific issues and to recommend to the legislature and the governor every year what laws need to be changed or amended. What did we learn in the last year that maybe something needs to get a little tighter because somebody abused something or maybe another barrier that needs to be removed? We really anticipate that those three big issues, liability, cybersecurity, insurance, are going to be what this council is going to take up first. Yes, they need to be answered. Yes, they need to be solved. They didn't have to be solved by last December. There's time to work on them, and the names have been submitted to the governor, and he's in the process of determining who the membership of that council is going to be. The next bill is very similar to that on-demand automated network, except this one is for auto manufacturers. So if you're an auto manufacturer, there's actually a little bit different requirements. The same general sense that you're still responsible for your vehicles and you determine where they can go and drive. But there's some reporting requirements and it's a little bit different than the other one. But they to the consumer, they will act very similar. And then the last bill creates the American Center for Mobility, which Laurel and John are both part of. And it enabled that center to come together, to be formed. We were in the process of forming it anyways. It's always nice to have a legal way to do that. We were happy that they pulled that piece together as well. I won't talk more about ACM because John will be able to do that. I would leave you with one last slide and one last thought. So how many remember the Jetsons, right? And if you're too young to remember the Jetsons, maybe you remember the Terminator. And there's Arnold in the back with his automated taxi. Or maybe you remember iRobot. All of those dealt with automated vehicles. The one thing that I think I grew up watching the Jetsons, I loved it. The thing that we haven't cracked yet is when George gets to the office and he pushes the button and the car folds up into his briefcase and he walks inside. That, Frank, when you guys get there, now we got something. So, Hollywood always predicts the future, we're getting a whole lot closer. And the last comment I would leave you with is I think that you all are going to see this play out on the streets in Michigan within the next 2 years. You're going to see some of these on the road. Just like we see experimental vehicles right now, you're going to see it all deployed. So With that, I'm going to turn it over to John Maddox, who is the CEO of American Center for Mobility, and he's going to run through that.
Okay. We're going to pass the iPad.
Pass the pad.
In fact, I'm going to put it right here so Wade and I can share it. Thanks, Kirk and Laurel, for a very good start. And thanks to you all for coming out on a wonderful Michigan winter evening. Hopefully there won't be a white snow squall on the way home and no traffic accidents. As Kirk mentioned, I'm John Maddox, the president and CEO of American Center for Mobility. Been living here in Michigan now for 20-plus years, off and on. I always tell people I've moved to Ann Arbor four times in my life. It's such a great place to live. So Laurel did a great job setting the stage of this future transportation system consisting of, you know, connected and automated vehicles, and mentioned that, you know, we've come to just accept as a fact that roughly 30,000 to 40,000 people will die on our roads due to traffic crashes here in the United States. And going forward, we can see a future where that doesn't happen anymore. And Laurel also mentioned that that these vehicles really are, the technology is moving fast. The vehicles aren't quite ready, but they'll be pretty close pretty soon. And we need this combination of on-road testing and operation and track testing and simulation. Kirk talked about what Michigan is doing to allow on-road operation, which is a critical piece. And I have to say that Michigan, of course, is at the forefront of the automotive technology, automotive industry, and Kirk's efforts and the governor's efforts and others like him to keep Michigan, the state and the government, kind of in the leading edge also is very important. So, and what we're doing is building that place. So in addition to testing on public roads, operating on public roads, we're building a closed course, a test facility. And probably should have let Professor Peng go first because, you know, he's going to talk, I'm sure, about M-City. And M-City, as you'll see, is kind of the prototype of what we're building at Willow Run. So we're doing it backwards a little bit, but bear with us. And there we go. So what is the American Center for Mobility? Well, many of you are probably aware of the Willow Run site and some of the history. I'll talk about that a little bit. Willow Run is just east of Ypsilanti. It's in Ypsilanti Township, as a matter of fact. Of course, its claim to fame is that it was the site of the famous bomber plant that was built before World War II, and then was the site of automotive manufacturing and powertrains operations for General Motors for a long time. It closed down in 2010, and now, actually, as you'll see in the pictures, it's leveled. It's a big flat concrete slab, but for us, it's pure gold. It's a place where it's incredibly well suited to what we want to do out there to enable this technology to move forward. And we're really about three things. The American Center for Mobility is a non-for-profit. We're after making sure that there's a place for companies and government to do product development here in Michigan to keep Michigan at the forefront. A place where we can create those voluntary standards that Laurel talked about. As it's very boring, I know, if someone told you that every car that you drive, every car that you buy, is built on about, you know, 200 or 300 of these voluntary standards, you would never know it. But they allow the auto industry to build highly functional vehicles, so we'll just leave it at that. They're critical for safety. Our third focus area is on education, and that's really ongoing professional education, training the next round of transportation technicians, drivers, certainly engineers, along with educational organizations like the University of Michigan and Michigan State and Washtenaw Community College, amongst others. This little cartoon here on the right, it's not quite the Jetsons, but it really kind of embodies what we're trying to do there. We're trying to take this, what was an incredibly historic site of amazing innovation, and make it now capable of testing these automated vehicles. The green vehicle, I think, is a if I got this right, is a 1949 Kaiser, which actually was built at Willow Run, not the cartoon version, but the real one. And the red vehicle, which is what I call a toaster on wheels, and maybe you've got some pictures of your vehicle. Remember the old toasters? Yeah. The people don't pop up when it stops, though. That's the good part. But they're connected. They're connected by a communication channel. And Laurel mentioned this. Kirk, I think, touched on it. You know, the connecting of vehicles together, connecting the vehicle to the roadway, to the traffic light, is a critical piece. It's like the internet for cars. Remember, some of us are old enough to remember when a computer sat on our desk and we could do some pretty cool word processing or photo, but really the value came when we connected it to 1,000 or a million or hundreds of millions of other computers and people. That's the internet. Created an unbelievable new set of values that we never thought about before. The same thing will happen for transportation. Right now, we're all driving around in our 1995 Dell, whatever they were back then, 286s. Pretty soon, we're going to be driving something much more capable. But importantly, we're going to connect those together and create an internet for transportation. And that's what we're going to prove out of Willow Run. Okay, so here's this slide shows, it's actually a postcard. It's a photo of a postcard that was created for Willow Run, and it really the place was amazing. Lots of firsts, but the one I like to talk about the most, especially when I keep pushing my staff and our partners to get this thing done fast. This whole facility, which was the largest manufacturing plant in the world at the time it was built. It was conceived, designed, built, outfitted, and became operational all in 18 months. That includes the manufacturing facility, the airport, and as you'll see, the surrounding highways, which predated the interstate system. So now it takes us 18 months to get the permits. But it's an amazing thing to think about what people can do when they put their mind to it and they work together. And we think that that's a great model for what we're trying to do going forward. Yeah. And so this next slide shows some of this. So a lot of people know about the history of the site and its role in World War II and after. But what people don't know is the history of other innovations at the site. This upper left corner is kind of an aerial view. And there you can see, of course, the building, and the airport, which was also the largest airport at the time, and the first airport with what we think of today as a modern control tower, where people actually could look out and see the air traffic, which is interesting to think about that for ground vehicles, perhaps in the future. But all of this, again, was done in 18 months. The center picture, this was the first time ever aircraft were built on an assembly line. So the story goes that the government, U.S. government, asked Henry Ford, Edsel Ford, to build one plane first a month and then a week. And they said, well, I think we can do better. And in the end, they built one plane in less than an hour, every hour. It truly is fascinating. It was the first place to have large numbers of women in the workforce. Rosie the Riveter, who I think, I don't think I have a picture of her here, but she was a real person. You said... Hollywood gives us the idea. In this case, Hollywood did do a version of Rosie the Riveter, but the real Rosie the Riveter worked at Willow Run. So Hollywood gives us the idea, but in Michigan, we build it. Of course, it was a bomber plant. This bottom picture is I think, quite fascinating because in 1942, there were only three triple-deckers under construction in the United States at all. So these were the first three triple deckers were being built in 1942, two of them at Willow Run and the third at the Pentagon. And the story goes that Kirk's predecessor,
not directly.
Right. He must have been a little guy, right? MDOT, the predecessor to MDOT, actually designed and built this thing before anybody else in the country, probably the world. I don't know about that. built one. The government, federal government, provided some funds to build it on, I think it was a Friday, February, I'm going to pick a date, I think it was 19th. On Saturday, the 20th, they were building it. And they had to thaw the ground. It was middle of February here in Michigan. It was cold. They actually had to thaw the ground to pour the concrete to build the structure. Incredible, incredible set of innovation. You drive over it every day if you drive on US 12. You don't think about that so much. But back then, that was all brand new. That's kind of where we're at today, too. And, of course, this was the site of the General Motors manufacturing plant for a long time, which employed a lot of people in the Ypsilanti and Ann Arbor area. Today, this is kind of what it looks like. This is actually about a year old. It's a blank slate. It's an empty site almost. You can see on the right side, there's some of that US 12 and wired road, what was called Willow Run Expressway. Again, it looks like the interstate, but it was built before the designed and built before the interstate US interstate system. Of course, it's still an active airport. There's still Hangar 1, which is that building kind of on the left side. And so right now you can see that we've got kind of this incredible opportunity to build a new test facility that looks like the real world, in fact incorporates some of the real world, but is controlled environment for the development of the vehicles.
Artists are often able to see things that others cannot. One person may see a blank canvas, while another sees a surface with endless potential. Willow Run Airport in Ypsilanti has been many things through history. While whispers of the past echo over the remains of industry, this concrete canvas is poised for its most noble purpose yet. Automotive technology is shifting toward a future where the vehicles we produce are able to communicate with each other and the environment around them. Michigan is again at the forefront of innovation, and a world-class facility for the safe testing of these vehicles is imperative for the future of transportation. This canvas holds the potential to change the world. It's time for the first brushstrokes on the American Center for Mobility.
There we go. So here's a conceptual view. If you kind of remember what that blank slate looked like, now we're looking at it from the south or from the top. We'll build a highway loop simulation to test the vehicles in highway conditions. An urban area, which is the orange area in the middle there, with a very large intersection where we can test six by six, 3 lanes in each direction, and how vehicles interact there. A simulation of a rural area. In fact, if any of you are familiar with Pinckney, where there's a road called Hankered Road, which goes to hell, and we are replicating that in this rural area. A residential area where we will build house facades and garages, most importantly, a place where an automated vehicle can wake up in the morning, take its occupant to work in the urban area, drive around the highway loop, go fuel itself in a commercial area, or wash itself in a car wash. All the scenarios and use cases that OEMs and Tier 1 suppliers will design into the vehicles, they will be able to test them here, either before they put it on the public road, or more importantly, when they want to come back and replicate a certain scenario, they can do it over and over and over again, something you can't do in the real world, but you can do in a test facility. This is a view of what that intersection might look like, and you'll see probably some similar ones from Way. Where we've got not real buildings but facades, maybe perhaps ones that we can reconfigure and move, a pedestrian-focused intersection, and I'm going to skip the rest. A boulevard, think of Telegraph Road or Washtenaw, or parts of Washtenaw, a tunnel. Humans know that we can drive through that. Robots have a harder time with that. So everything that might be a hard scenario for an automated vehicle to accomplish. So with that, I'm going to just get to Way's starting slide. Oh, I should also mention that in addition...
Excuse me, I know you didn't want questions, but just to put things in perspective.
Yeah.
How many miles is that around?
It's 2.5 miles. It's,
how many?
Yeah, 2.5, okay. Roughly 70 miles an hour. Yeah, thank you. Sorry about that. In addition to the facility, we'll also have a campus because we think it's really critical to focus on that standard setting and that education mission along with universities and colleges. So with that, I'm going to Turn it over to Wes.
So I'd like to start by echo what Laura said. Kirk is indeed one of the most forward-thinking state DOT director in the nation, and so we have been very lucky to have been working with Kirk on many projects. A lot of what we do at University of Michigan is not possible without the collaboration and support from the state of Michigan, MDOT, MEDC. John was with MTC. Frank Bosch is a member of MTC. So a lot of what we do at University of Michigan is only possible with all the support of all these partners. So we focus on two things. We look into the future. We know that the future vehicles will be like the personal computers. They must be more connected. They must be more automated, smarter, being able to do more things. So about 2 years ago, we started to launch a public-private partnership. It's a research center with many industrial members. It's called Mobility Transformation Center. And MTC operate MCity. MCity, many of you have heard. We focus on using these connected automated technologies to improve mobility, safety, and environment. So MCity, I think MCity is right directly south of the Blue Water Tower on the Plymouth Road. So if you happen to see a dentist in that building, you probably know where MCity is. So in MCity, we have been doing many testing. There is a driving simulator with MCity environment. There are several commercial software, including the one video you're seeing. This is a car scene, a software that's made by an Ann Arbor company. It's one of the most used vehicle dynamics simulation software, and the environment you see there is also MCity. Companies such as Honda, Ford, Toyota, and many others have tested automated connected vehicle functions inside MCity, including the snowtonomy testing, showing that robot vehicles can also drive safely in snow. I'm trying to play this video. So this is a bird's eye view shot from a drone, and you can see that companies have been testing automated and connected vehicle features inside MCity. And you see the Blue Water Tower, that's where we are. I would like to mention that many Ann Arborites have been part of MTC activities. Maybe you don't know that, but starting from about 4 years ago, we have recruited a lot of volunteer drivers, and they bring their vehicles to us, especially University of Michigan Transportation Research Institute, UMTRI. And we outfit these vehicles with minimum DSRC dedicated short-range communication and GPS. And the purpose of this instrumentation is so that we have this background traffic. They are broadcasting the vehicle position, velocity, acceleration information so that we can do experiment. I'll give you one example of what kind of new features these new communications enable. When a car brakes very hard, it would be nice that the robot vehicle behind it will see a quote-unquote brake light. So today's brake light was designed for human drivers, but we need something like that for robot vehicles. So the communication of the leading vehicle's action to the vehicles behind or at the intersection will make driving much safer. So that's the whole point of connected vehicles. So when we say connected vehicles, we mean this vehicle-to-vehicle, vehicle-to-infrastructure communication. We don't mean that you are connecting to the cloud, you're downloading a movie. Those are the business of AT&T and Verizon. So what the state DOT or federal DOT is trying to do is to promote this vehicle-to-vehicle communication for safety. We want to reduce these 35,000 fatalities by 80 to 90%. That's really the most important motivation behind DSRC, and that's what many of you Ann Arborites have been helping us to test. So we are still looking for volunteers. We just need another 50 billion drivers in our test program. So if you happen to have a vehicle that has not been instrumented, please contact us. We'd love to have you become one of our test fleet. So 19 of the intersections, those red stars intersections have been equipped with roadside unit, and they talk to the cars. So today, they do something very simple. They broadcast traffic signal information, but going forward, this information will also be used to tune the timing of the traffic signal so that we can reduce congestion and waiting time. So if you want those traffic signal listen and respond to you, it's better that you become part of our test fleet. All right, so going forward, we are hoping that we have surveyed 62 intersections in the city of Ann Arbor, and we are in the next year also, we hope to finish most of the 62 intersections, and they will all have roadside unit talking to the DSRC vehicles we have. So in addition to connected, we are also interested in understanding the travel behavior of the city of Ann Arbor. And the movie you see there is actually directed from our test fleet. So what we are able to collect and know is when and where people travel, so that this information going forward, we hope they can be used to tune our traffic signals more efficiently. They can use to place our public transportation system more efficiently. I know that many of you have been stopped behind a red light where the other direction there is absolutely no vehicles, and the time you wasted is absolutely for no good reason. We hope that going forward, when cars are talking to each other and talking to the traffic signals, those waste will be reduced. In addition, we are collecting a lot of information using the University of Michigan Blue Bus System, and we should be able to use automated vehicles to augment today's buses so that this public transportation system will be more efficient and will reduce your wait time. We are also, of course, trying to educate our students. We are building this open CAV platform for the three purposes. These vehicles, these technologies today are very expensive. The vehicle you see here, thanks to our industrial members such as Bosch, we spent $280,000 purchasing this vehicle with the state-of-the-art LiDAR radar cameras, and they are being the vehicle has been used by about 15 of our students trying to develop various new technologies such as machine vision, perception, localization, and control algorithm. We also try to promote open innovation. Some of the software we use in the early days were closed, and we are trying to integrate with the open source platform such as robot operating system that has made the progress in robotics much faster. So we are trying to adopt similar idea and promote the use of RAS in developing automated vehicle functions. Finally, of course, as University of Michigan, we have to strengthen our talent pipeline. That's our core mission. So this is the Navia vehicle, the toaster vehicle John was referring to. So this vehicle has been used to give tours of MCity. And going forward, we are thinking maybe it will be very cool to start testing whether these vehicles can serve our mobility service in the street of Ann Arbor. We are getting another test vehicle. This is going to be much cheaper, so we work with many companies very hard, and this automated vehicle platform will be only $100,000. In terms of the Tesla fatal crash, how am I doing with time? I don't see any reminder.
You're good.
I'm good. You're good. All right. So Tesla, I know many of you heard about this crash. So what we were using this very particular crash as an example, this white tractor trailer was making a left turn, and the Tesla vehicle was not able to see the truck because the camera was not designed to see and differentiate white color against a white sky. and then the radar system see a metal object floating above the ground, thinking that must be an overhead traffic sign. So that particular example clearly indicate the need of better sensor fusion, and we believe that this vehicle had the Tesla being equipped with either a vehicle-to-vehicle communication. And if the tractor-trailer has that, the Tesla vehicle has that capability, this fatal crash could have been avoided. Or, of course, we think that if we have a cheap LiDAR available on the Tesla vehicle, this crash can also be avoided. We do many research. And in the word cloud version, this is what we do. Mm-hmm. Currently, we support about 30 research projects within Mobility Transformation Center, hoping to educate many of our graduate students and undergraduate students to be the leading engineers in this field. Basically leaving you with one thing to think about. How would connected automated vehicles impact the society? So even if we just think about something very simple, energy consumption, will automated vehicles increase our energy consumption or decreasing the energy consumption? There are many possible factors. For example, if automated vehicles, since we are no longer paying the driver, this automated vehicle function costs, operational costs will be much cheaper, will that promote more driving? Or these vehicles drive so smart, they can platoon, they can promote eco-driving, departure, we can have better congestion mitigation. Will that decrease energy consumption? As a matter of fact, this chart shows many possible factors, the red one being factors that will increase energy consumption, the green ones being those that will reduce. There are many open research questions to be answered. We believe a research center such as UM Mobility Transformation Center will play a key role in answering those key questions. We are very proud to have this center being supported by many companies, including Bosch. And the future is that we think that Michigan will lead the development of connected and automated vehicles. We think that MCT and the city of Ann Arbor will be the world's leading connected automated vehicle laboratory and living laboratories. And U of M will continue to do impactful research and education. But at the end, the most important KPI are saving lives, reduce congestions, and reduce energy consumption and emission. So that's our mission and goal. That's what we are focusing on doing at MTC. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you, Hui. And with that, we'll turn it over to Frank Scambati, Director of Marketing and Product Innovation at Bosch.
So good evening, everyone. I wanted to thank Emily for inviting us, the City of Ann Arbor, for also having us here. Bosch is very pleased and proud to be a member of this panel. Also wanted to thank the library for hosting this event. And, of course, my esteemed panelists, who have also, I think, laid out a really good, at least, opening of what things are going in different perspectives. So I'm going to kind of change gears just a little bit and talk more about the technology that's involved with automated and connected vehicles. So we have what we call the road to highly automated vehicles. This includes the connectivity piece, which was discussed earlier in the panel. So from a Bosch perspective, one of the things that we do focus on is safety, convenience and comfort in developing system solutions and technologies for our OEM customers. And part of that is towards this roadmap to automated driving. Just a quick little bit overview of Bosch. I've worked for the company for 20 years, and never a week goes by, or at least a year goes by, that I explain where I work, and everybody says, oh, Bausch & Lomb, the contact supplier, and I have to explain to them no. So we're about 375,000 associates worldwide. We actually are located in about 440 subsidiaries and regional companies in approximately 60 countries. We have 118 engineering sites, three of which are local. We have one with our subsidiary ETAS and eScript that's located here in Ann Arbor. And then we have two engineering sites, one in Plymouth, Michigan, and one in Farmington Hills, Michigan. I'm actually coming from the Plymouth facility. So we also are about $78 billion in total revenue. We did about $5 billion in EBIT, so that's our earnings. And then finally, just wanted to highlight, when you consider all of our various facilities and industry, including our sales and service partners, we're located in about 150 countries. So how we're made up, we have four business sectors. We have our first, which is our mobility solutions business sector, which is our largest. It's about 60 to 65% of our global revenue. Then we have our industrial technology division. This is, the brand name is Rexroth. It's industrial hydraulics. We are actually the proud supplier of the Panama Canal locks and the hydraulic system located there. Then we have what we call our energy and building technology sector, and this is the area where we do things like the Bosch tankless water heaters that many of you may know of. And then finally, consumer goods, which many folks know us regarding dishwashers. It's one of the quietest in the market, but we also do power tools, both for tradesmen and for the do-it-yourselfers. So what we tend to do as a technology company is we have to understand where the world trends are taking us. So here in this slide, the focus areas that we have seen, it's on a global basis. We look at the demography, the urbanization, the energy and climate, and the connectivity. You're going to hear a lot of the same terms that were spoken with the earliest panels, but I mean, from our perspective, one of the key areas we see is that the aging population of over 65 is growing at twice the rate at the other age segments. There's about 5 billion people, about 60% of the population, that are actually moving into cities. We also see limiting the chances of limiting global warming by 2 degrees Celsius is very slight. And then finally, on the connectivity pieces, you probably heard of the term the Internet of Things. John mentioned the Internet of Transportation, which I thought was very cool. I hadn't heard that one. But 50 billion things will be connected going forward in this country, should say on a global basis. So coming back to the mobility sector, so looking into the future of mobility, Bosch is kind of segmented in three different areas of focus. We're looking at the automated, electrified, and connected pieces of a vehicle and the future of mobility. And when we say the future of mobility, we're not only talking of passenger cars, but it's commercial vehicles. It's now some of the toasters that John had talked about earlier, but even electronic bikes or even two-wheelers, motorcycles, any form of transportation. Today I'm going to focus on the automated piece, and it was alluded to earlier on the panel related to what's happening. The technology is being worked on by companies like Bosch and others, but what is needing to happen, there needs to be some legislative piece, which Kurt had talked about earlier. It was a great introduction into exactly what Michigan is doing to address these issues, to allow technology providers like Bosch to be able to do what we do normal and do what we do best. But I think there's things that are also going to be included in the automated piece are redundancies. And when we say redundancies, it's redundancies for brake systems, it's redundancies for steering systems, and even redundancies for the electrical architecture, which is kind of the communications in the vehicles. And then when you consider all of the sensor technologies that need to be involved to get to this fully automated vehicles, we're talking about sensors that are like radar and LiDAR. These are the onboard sensors, but then you connect these vehicles to, let's say, not only through DSRC, which is the 5.9 gigahertz frequency, which is part of the safety pilot deployment and the ongoing activities that Wei had mentioned as far as the MTC is involved in, and even Southeast Michigan in general, with what Kirk and his team has been doing with all the infrastructure. But then the functions that come out of that are things like what we would call emergency braking, which is on the roadways today, which is one form of automation, an early form, but then things like highway pilot, valet parking, so on and so forth. So I wanted to kind of give a little bit of a global view, too. Bosch being a global company, I mean, we're located, as I mentioned in the earlier slides, pretty much worldwide. And some of the activities that we're involved in, including the demonstration and the development of the automated technologies, we're doing in North America, we're doing in Europe, and we're doing in Asia Pacific. We're very proud to say that we actually did some of our first testing here in Michigan on highways, according to, again, thanks to the laws that were passed here in the legislation from 2013, and we're also doing testing in our facilities in California. And we've actually continued to do testing here locally, and up to date, I think we have more than 20,000 miles of actual vehicle testing on Michigan roads, thanks again to the cooperation from our colleagues from MDOT. We're also doing testing, of course, in our home country in Germany along the A81 corridor. And then finally, our most recent testing and demonstration, which we debuted actually in the land down under in Australia during the ITS World Congress that was held in Melbourne. And it was one of our first launched vehicles that is actually a right-hand drive vehicle, fully automated and connected and actually interacting not only with the infrastructure, but we were doing demonstrations with V2V, with a motorcyclist, where the vehicle was warned that there was a motorcyclist in its blind spot. So you can see it's not only it's a Bosch situation, there's activities that Wei has mentioned and John mentioned earlier. There's test facilities that are being developed. So you have the ACM and you have the MTC that is local. And again, Bosch is very proud to be one of the founding members of the Leadership Circle member for the Mobility Transformation Center here in Ann Arbor. The university has been a big support of the technology, and so we're very proud to be part of that activity and that ecosystem. So maybe just to kind of help explain a little bit about what the architecture, or the vehicle segmentation that we see in the market today. So there's kind of two areas of focus that we're seeing the market kind of trend towards. The first is in the area of what we would call low-speed, urban, fleet-based automated vehicles. And these are full sensor set vehicles. These are vehicles and developers that are trying to go fast to market. Ford is a good example where they've initiated that by 2021 that they would have what's called a level 4 vehicle in a certain specific location, a limited area, or what we would call in the industry a geofenced location. And of course, these vehicles are shared. And so again, the legislation that Kirk had mentioned Michigan had passed allows for these kind of low speed and urban and fleet-based vehicles. Then we have what we call the high speed or a highway and personal use vehicle segmentation. So we have a lot of players and a lot of our customers that are working in this area. So what they're looking at are mass production components, which are the components that suppliers like Bosch can provide, or even system solutions to support their development of the high-speed or highway personal activities. We have the idea that this will be a gradual introduction, so it would be more of a stepwise approach. It's one of the areas that Bosch feels is important. It's more of an evolutionary introduction of this technology because the technology needs to be understood both from a limit and capability for you and I as an end consumer. And then there's the concept that it'll be personal ownership, and then, of course, in a limited function. And the glue that kind of keeps all of this together is what we would call this the three themes that we follow in the future of mobility, which is the electrified, automated, or connected. And things that we're seeing is there's disruptive technologies that are changing the roadmap and changing the landscape quite a bit. We definitely see the increase in automation. We see on the vehicles moving to being all electrics, and then, of course, fully connected vehicles. But this is kind of the glue that keeps these two areas in focus. So this slide is I found this that it was kind of an interesting way to explain the so-called levels of automation. It's actually outdated because this was actually established by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration to explain the various levels of automation. I find it ironic that the Johnny Cab was already talked about, but starting at level zero, that would be your typical 1972 Chevrolet Vega, and yes, I did drive a Chevrolet Vega at one time. Moving on to levels 1, 2, 3, and 4, and what you see is you can see the change going from the driver to the vehicle as far as control, the monitoring, and the actual overall driving experience. Finally, ending at this, what we would call a level 4 fully automated vehicle, the so-called Johnny Cab from the Total Recall movie. In the more, I would say, modern or the more recent adoption, there's also the SAE International version, which they also have levels 0 through 5. But the only difference between the old NHTSA version was 4 and 5 is now split out based on whether the vehicle is in one of these urban geo-fenced areas. That would be considered a level 4. It's a limited automation, where a level 5 vehicle is more or less fully automated, some would call self-driving. So one of the key areas that we're working on in Bosch is we're looking at the sensors that provide the onboard so-called eyes, ears, and smell. So this is what you and I would do as a human driver. We're learning and we're trying to teach the vehicle through all of the onboard sensors like radar, like LiDAR sensors, camera sensors, and even ultrasonic sensors. And this gives this, what you can see, and this is directly a picture from one of our test vehicles, and that's a vision or a view of those orange boxes or objects that the car is actually seeing. And then you can see as the vehicle is transponding down the roadway, the objects come and go. Unfortunately, it's not in a dynamic form. But the key here is that the sensors actually operate like what you and I would do as a driver. I would say we are somewhere near in the phase of, it, let's say, a 16-year-old or a 17-year-old driver. So these vehicles aren't perfect. They're learning, but they're getting better and better as the more experience they have on roadways and as the sensor technology improves. And then one of the other aspects is what we would call the connectivity or the communications piece, so the precise communication. And so this is where both Wei and John and even Kirk all talked about this car-to-car communication, the safety pilot deployment that actually occurred here in Ann Arbor and continues to go through with the MTC Pillar 1s and Pillar 2 deployments. So here is just a view of what we call our roadmap to automation. So from a Bosch perspective, we see this coming in phases. And so we see this gradual change going from assisted driving to partially automated driving and eventually to what we would call fully automated driving. And again, using this terminology of levels, so we go from a level 0 vehicle that has no automation to a level 5 vehicle that has high automation and basically a self-driving car. And we see, as what we know today, because this is an ever-changing landscape and the technologies are changing so rapidly, but at the moment we predict by a 2025 timeframe, you're going to see some of these self-driving cars in limited numbers for sure on the roadways of the world. And then here is a video that I'm going to let play to maybe explain a little bit why we're actually in this space.
All around the world, there's lots of deaths from vehicles every year, and this is something that can be avoided by technology. There's no reason someone has to die from an automobile accident with the level of technology we have.
Bosch has been working on automated driving for many years now. One big step surely was in 2013 when we did the first public road tests on German Autobahn and on highways in Michigan and California.
For the first time, the control of the vehicle is not in responsibility of the driver anymore. And just from this fact, new challenges arise.
Our sensor set right now consists of three different sensor technologies. We use radar sensors, we use laser scanners, and we also use stereo video cameras.
Each sensor sees a little bit of different view of the world, and you want to make that all one combined picture to be able to make decisions on.
The most important reason for combining three sensor technologies is the redundancy and the diversity that we need in order to perform well under all conditions.
All weather and road conditions, day and night.
We want to have a clear understanding what happens around the car and what will happen around the car during automated driving.
The main input for the onboard localization of an automated vehicle are localization features, for example, lane markings or traffic signs. The features are stored in the localization map and are measured by the onboard sensors. By comparing that information, we can figure out where the vehicle is located and how it is oriented within a lane.
An automated vehicle is planning its route in a very similar way than humans do. The system is permanently supervising which maneuver is the best trade-off between the risk, the fuel consumption, and the time to our destination.
Communication between the driver and vehicle is the key for automated driving to success.
We're designing our vehicle in a way that the driver receives the right amount of information at the right point in time so that he or she can gain trust in our system.
I can decide whether I'm the driver or the passenger, and it gives me the opportunity to safely execute other tasks while being driven.
Instead of losing time driving your car to work, you can decide how to spend this time.
It will synchronize the traffic flow and so improve the efficiency in the road.
Automated driving definitely has the potential to revolutionize mobility as we know it today.
Bosch is mainly working on automated driving to make road traffic safer, more comfortable, and more efficient.
And those were actually all the research scientists and engineers that actually were working on the project. I just wanted to summarize what we were talking about here from a Bosch perspective. But you can see, I mean, here, things that we're looking at are, it's coming gradually, and it's coming for sure. It will be increasing road safety. Many of us spoke about that here in the panel today. It will allow people of all ages to actually be mobile. I have a personal situation, an 85-year-old. My father-in-law hasn't been able to drive for the last 4 years because of degenerative vision. I think it will usher in a new dimension of driving enjoyment, and obviously will synchronize the traffic flow and improve fuel efficiency. Thank you.